Did you know that there are over 3.2 million podcasts in the world? It seems like everybody these days has a podcast. But did you also know that 90% of those podcasts fail to make it to 20 episodes? There are various reasons for these failures, but one reason is that people don't know what they're doing. Shocking, right? As it turns out, the same reason why people don't operate on themselves also applies to podcast success. You want to talk to someone who has had success launching and marketing podcasts. Somebody like Juliana Barbati. Juliana runs a podcast marketing and production agency, and their team takes care of everything for you, making this process a breeze. All their info is in the show notes. You can go to julianabarbati.com, tell them TGFB sent you, and get a discount when paying in Bitcoin. That's right. Juliana is a Bitcoiner. Her and her husband were actually Bitcoiners before they were Christians. And so it's been great for us to work with them. They basically came to us and said, hey, we'd love to help you guys, help TGFB grow. And so we'd love to kind of apply our services to you guys. So go ahead and support them. If you have a podcast you're working on or one that you'd like to start, go ahead and check them out. Now let's get to today's show. Adam O'Brien, welcome to the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.
Ah, dude, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, man, it's great to have you on. This has been a medium length time coming. We've been going back and forth on DMs and tweets for a while and just figured, all right, let's just sit down and chat.
Yeah, man. No, it's great. Love chatting to people. Love talking Bitcoin. Love talking Jesus. It's a good combo.
Why don't you introduce yourself for people who maybe aren't familiar with who you are and what you do?
Yeah, man. I'm Adam O'Brien. I'm the founder and CEO at Bitcoin Well. We're a non-custodial Bitcoin company here in Canada. Been doing that since like 2013. So been doing it for quite a while. And recently launched into the USA, which has been super exciting. And also on like the personal side, I'm a married man. My wife and I have been married for 10 years, which is incredible. And I highly recommend it. And we have four small kids, which is equally as incredible, and a little puppy. So yeah, man, just it's been a wild ride for the last 10 years and excited to be here.
Cool. Well, yeah, again, like you said, we've gone back and forth a little bit, have kind of chatted about a number of different things that we'll get into later here in the episode. But you're a Christian, which is increasingly common in the Bitcoin space. I'm meeting more and more Christians. When we do interviews with folks who are Christians, that's kind of where we start is, you know, how did you become a Christian and how and why? And
yeah, man, yeah, dude. Okay. I've also been feeling this, and I'm not sure if it's just like recency bias or what the deal is, but it feels like the pendulum is swinging hard toward the cross, which is super cool. Yeah, man, I think like growing up, kind of grew up in a fairly Christian home, Christian values, went to church. My faith kind of became my own, I would say, when I was like 12-ish. Got baptized at that time at my Alliance Church that I go to. And then kind of like throughout life, throughout those early adolescent years, continued to lean into my faith. And then throughout my early adulthood, kind of like, I wouldn't say fell away from it. I would still have called myself, but maybe wasn't living for the Lord as much. Yeah. And so that was kind of my early adulthood. And then, one day it was just like, woke up, snapped. And I was just like, all right, like, I got to live for the Lord. Yeah. And I started going to church. My then girlfriend and now wife, she like started coming with me to church. She gets baptized. We get married. There's like, we've got like some cool parts in our testimony. Thumbs up. There we go. We've got some cool parts in our testimony about like some decisions that we made. And like, it was awesome. And then kind of like, again, though, that was a cool part of my life and a cool part of my story. And then kind of went through and started the company and started having kids. And again, just like never really lost touch, but wasn't like on fire. Yeah. But then recently, man, just kind of diving into like my beliefs and like why Bitcoin is so biblical and how, you know, I've been giving a presentation called Jesus is a Bitcoiner and what that is. And I've been leaning into that. And it's kind of interesting. My wife was kind of like spending more time reading the Bible and devotions, and her and I talking more and more about that. And that's kind of brought me back. So it's super cool how the whole winding path of everything. Yeah, here we are.
Is it Christian Missionary Alliance? Is that who the...
It's an Alliance Church. So like not quite Pentecostal, but also like not... Yeah, it's... I don't know, man. Denominations always like mess me up. I'm not 100% sure.
Like general evangelical. Yeah. It's funny because like there's writing a book with Dan Sherman. I don't know if you're familiar with him. His Twitter handle is @HodlingJ. His name on Twitter is like Hodling Jesus. He works for an organization that has both U.S. and other entities basically around the world. And the Canadian entity is named something different than the U.S. entity. So I didn't know if CMA had something similar, and I just wanted to, you know, verify that.
No, I'm not 100% sure, but I mean.
Okay, so you said your wife, I guess, is that more of like a recent thing where she's been reading more and kind of getting you into it? Like, what were the specific things that she read, or is
kind
it just...
Kind of. You know, like, it was actually more throughout COVID. Like, I had quite deep convictions about, like, how bad the COVID stuff was.
Sure, sure.
And my wife, like, bless her soul, she's like, well, I want to get some biblical guidance on this. And so she starts, like, listening, she starts reading, she starts, and I'm just, like, headstrong, like, no, like, you know, and she's like, let's just take a second here and let's just actually think about this. So she's, like, reading, and then her and I are having these incredible discussions, and it kind of, like, reinvigorated my, you know, like, oh, man, I forgot how awesome the Bible is, and, like, how, like, relevant, and, like, how... So I start reading more, and we're reading together, and we start praying more together. And it's like, hey, this is how it's supposed to be done. Yeah. Right? Like, and again, not that we were opposed to it, but that's like, you know, life gets in the way.
Other stuff going, I get it.
You forget. Yeah. And then boom. And so that's been, I'd say kind of the last 18, 24 months or so. Okay. And that's where I was writing a presentation about time preference when orange pilling your friends.
Yep.
And I was thinking about this. And so I started, like, thinking about the people that I've orange pilled. And of course, my wife is, like, the most important person that I've orange pilled, because I wouldn't be able to do 95% of what I do if she wasn't. Agreed. And so I was like, okay, well, how did that go? And then I was like, oh, wow, it was actually probably the Bible that was the biggest influence there. And then I was like, wait a second, how does that? And then that's what kind of transitioned into, well, Jesus is a big winner.
No, we're going to get there. We're going to talk about that, because that's obviously something that I've dug into a ton and, like, thought about a ton. So I definitely want to get there. Like, do you remember offhand what were some of the things that your wife was was it mainly scripture, or were there other books that she was reading that kind of spurred along and kind of brought you guys to similar conclusions, maybe, but just through different paths?
I'm actually not 100% sure. I think it had to do with, I know that she found like the Girls Gone Bible podcast over the last year-ish, and she likes that. So just watching, I think, more like faith-based content on YouTube, like Ruslan, so he's pretty good. But then obviously, like, I don't know specifically in the Bible what she was reading. Her and I have been, like, I've been, like, deep into I think, like, Romans and Matthew have been where I've been drawing most of my inspiration over the last couple of months. But for her, I know that she was, like, Jonah was she talked a lot about what that looked like and how this, like, incredible life turned not so great, but how he was just, like, steadfast. He was just like, no, I'm good. Like, I got this. I got my God. I'm good. And she talked a lot about that. And we talked a lot about that. And so, yeah, I don't think it was one specific, like, aha moment as much as it was just a deep interest.
Just over time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. Was some of this related to COVID? Like, what was some of the, what you said, some of this was related to?
And let me be clear, not her initial faith, just this desire for her and I to maybe, that's kind of what's, like, revigorated, or, like, this next level, this new fire, I guess. But yeah, it was certainly around, like, my immediate opposition to, like, in Canada here, man, we had some restrictions, and, and it was, there was, like, lots of problems, and I was, like, not cool with lots of the restrictions and not cool with lots of the stuff. And so I was like, rah, rah. And she was kind of like, hey, you know, I feel like I should maybe, like, read about this. And, like, she also, like, she logically was like, this is not right. But she's like, okay, I want something else to guide my life. And so that's what really, you know, and then that's where she kind of started thinking on more of a spiritual, you know, broader level, looking for guidance, I would say. And yeah, like, we arrived at the saying, like, oh yeah, okay, we shouldn't be doing this. You know, we're not going to perpetuate this lie. We're going to speak openly. But what she, and I think what she does amazingly, is, like, she pulls me more towards, like, respect, and she pulls me more towards, like, humility. And I think that's some of the most key things.
Yeah, because it's easy, especially when you're seeing, it's like, crazy injustice, it's easy just to want to explode and go over, like, just flip out and do all the kind of stuff. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, there's been probably the last 4 years, 4 or 5 years of people trying to answer that same question, right? It's like, what is the relationship between Christians and government, and, you know, what is our responsibility? And we've talked about this on this podcast, we've talked about this in other places too, is, like, there is this crisis of definition, right? It's like a definitional crisis where, like, the question is, like, what is anything? and how do you know? Like, really? Like, right? Like, that's a lot of these things. There's just a bunch of parts of society where we've put off these larger questions in the name of expediency, in the name of, you know, doing other things. We just kind of keep pushing them, kicking the can down the road and having those conversations. And the reality is, you can't do that. The reality is, you're having those conversations, you're having to make decisions based around those conversations all the time, even if you're not willing to stop and do it. And so, dude, questions of, go ahead.
My buddy just sent me a song that he wrote, like, a few days ago. And in there, it says something, I'm okay with the inefficiency. So it's so funny that you said, I literally listened to it for the first time this morning. I like was, my message is a bit backlog. I open it, let's do it on my drive into the office this morning. And it was saying that, and that hit me so hard because it's so inefficient, right? And we're a world. And I think that's like one of the lies that maybe in the traps that we fall into is like this desire for like constant immediate growth, and and there's a place for that in business, there's a place for that in certain areas of life, but in our lives, in our overarching, on the macro, I think it can get so scary.
Correct. Yeah. And again, like, I'm sure this has been part of your journey. Again, you've been in Bitcoin 2013. So I mean, just the idea of time preference, I'm sure that that's been something. Totally. Again, I've just been thinking about that for as long as I've been in Bitcoin, thinking about that from a Christian lens. And, you know, one of the chief scriptural metaphors through which God compares spiritual growth, compares the growth of his kingdom, compares lots of things to, are these agricultural metaphors where you plant and it looks weak and it doesn't look impressive, it doesn't look powerful. And then over time, you know, it starts to grow into something that is more impressive and is more useful and beneficial. And so I do think that it's a challenge to a Western being accustomed to getting things quickly and efficiency. This is a while ago, I had some tweet about often the path of love will be inefficient.
Dude, it's so true.
If you're going to be loving with your kids, it involves lots of time playing with them when, you know, you're like, or helping them do things. You're like, man, I could do this in 4 minutes, but instead we're going to help you learn how to do this thing so that, you know, we sow the seeds of explaining and it being inefficient now so that it'll be more efficient later. And
Not even more efficient later, just better for them later.
Yes,
like it is sacrifice, right? It's like, this is worse for me right now so that you get like a non-immediate benefit at some point in the future. And by the way, doing it one time, like, doesn't matter. You have to actually adopt a life of inefficiency to make real impact in the younger generations, like down the road.
Yeah, and agreed. And love is very inefficient.
Yeah.
Because just to dedicate the time and to be patient and not just look at everything and every relationship through the lens of how can this benefit me today? It's just a constant temptation for us to live that way. And you just have to fight against that. And that's a battle for faith. It's a battle to trust the Lord and just trust that he's going to provide for your needs, even if you're not always able to see how that's going to benefit. We don't walk by sight, we walk by faith. So
yeah, but then part of that faith though also becomes logical, because once you're rooted in that, it becomes very hard not to trust and not to want to walk in that direction, right? It almost like kind of like what my wife, I think, recently, like, kind of just, you know, recently over the last couple of years, it was like, no, I need some guidance on this. I'm not going to talk to anyone. I'm going to lean into the scripture. I'm going to lean into the content that I like respect, and although only to give me insight, and then through prayer, make my decisions. Yep. I think our church just went through like a lead pastor change. It was great, like the way that they did it, blah, blah, blah. But I loved how they really like emphasized the prayer throughout, and I think that was really excellent.
Man, we could go a lot of directions with that, but yeah, I think that's just the dependence. That's another thing. You're just like depending on the Lord frequently looks like weakness. To be a Christian is to live a dependent life. It's just admit that, orient your life and your decision making around the fact that you're not in control, and just to know that, like, God, he's, for all of recorded human history, he's worked basically through that dynamic in order to increase our reliance on him and to increase our trust in him by watching him provide over and over for our needs. I do want to ask you, so you talked about, you know, finishing high school, and you talked about moving on into the business world, I guess into your career. Did you study business in college? Where did that kind of come? No,
completely. Like, that desire early on.
Okay.
As a young child, I was like always selling my father's things, sometimes without his permission.
Yeah.
My sister will tell you that she hated growing up with me because whenever we got something cool, I would just immediately sell it and then buy something that I wanted. Like, I loved commerce. I loved the art of selling things. So yeah, I think the entrepreneurship or whatever started at an early age. And Bitcoin, frankly, when I got into it, it was like completely opportunistic. There was zero, like, this is going to change the world. Like, I was not smart enough to really see that early on.
Yeah.
That's also not what Bitcoin was at that time. Like, Bitcoin, it was for cypherpunks and internet nerds.
And speculators,
And speculators, exactly. Yeah. But even speculators hadn't really got into Bitcoin, like, in 2013, 2014. There was some number go up at that time, but it wasn't like it is today.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, kind of just found Bitcoin, thought it was a joke, tried to disprove it. But then when you try to disprove, that's the best thing you can possibly do with something, is try to disprove it. Because you have to research and you have to learn. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, actually, this is different than I thought, but it makes a lot of sense. And then it's like, oh, hey, that's different than I thought. And that makes a lot of sense, too. And then it's like more and more and more and more. And it's kind of like, oh, wow. Like, actually, this is super logical. I can't believe I've ever thought money to be anything other than this. And here's Bitcoin.
So that's Bitcoin. Let me ask you, as far as like the business, like what did you study in college, in university?
I didn't go to college. I
you know, oh, you didn't go?
No,
okay.
No, I'm like a high school kid.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So what did that look like? So you just went right to work as soon as you got out of high school?
Yeah, like right to work. So basically I left high school and I forget what state you're in, but it's so funny because the US has this like really insane post-secondary culture. Correct. Here in Canada, like there's some of it, but it's not like it is.
Gotcha. It's for the better.
I mean, I think so. Yep. But so I left high school, immediately started working two jobs. I worked from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. at night, like 6 days a week. Saved
what
up
were you doing?
Money. I worked. So in the mornings I was like detailing cars and I was like a lot boy and then I would leave at 3 p.m. and go work like a labor kind of like not construction. I wouldn't call it construction, but like labor.
Just manual
I
labor.
Was just a site hand that was pushing broom or pulling nails or taking ceilings down or like whatever needed to be done that day kind of thing. I'd show up, there'd be a list and then off I'd go. And then, you know, some other days I'd pick up shifts at a golf course. Like I just loved to work. I was always working, always busy. Saved enough money, went to Australia, got a work visa, played golf there, worked there full time. Job just
played golf like not professionally played golf.
No, not professionally. Just like went played golf.
Yeah,
you know, worked at a golf course, lived with a golf pro, just loved playing golf and working. Worked, and then came home, started working at a restaurant in the restaurant industry, and then shortly thereafter found Bitcoin. And that's kind of how I got into the space.
So you find Bitcoin again. I know you said you were in it for opportunistic reasons, but like what had already happened in your life that helped you see the value proposition of Bitcoin, at least even to the point where it interested you?
Just to the fact that I could buy and sell it, and the fact that so being from the restaurant industry, I had some like customer experience. Like I knew how to make good experiences.
Okay.
And then on the other side, I was very curious, I still am very curious, but especially at that time, very curious. Yep. And so I was like, oh, I want to buy this mysterious internet money that I think is a scam, but maybe actually has some potential. And so went to go buy it, had a horrible customer experience. Like literally the options at that point were like, wire money to Russia or like meet a guy in a back alley. Like those were the options. It was just both. Yeah. It was just two bad things. Like, so opted for like the back alley experience, got what you'd expect buying like digital money in a back alley. It was like super sketchy and I felt weird and bad. And so after that, I was kind of like, oh, hey, I could probably like, I'll buy someone a coffee and sell them Bitcoin rather than like shuffle into their car in a back alley.
Sure.
And so started doing that and got kind of a couple phone calls. And then it was like every week I was meeting someone new. And then it was like every day I was meeting someone new. And then it was holy smokes. Like I'm the Bitcoin guy all of a sudden in Edmonton. And then shortly thereafter, it was around October 2013, the world's first Bitcoin ATM was launched in Vancouver.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, that's way better than meeting people at coffee shops. Yeah. Like, I'll just buy one of those and put it in. And so we did that. We launched Alberta and then Saskatchewan's first Bitcoin ATMs. Let's in go. 2014.
Okay. And who's we?
Me. Like since day one, I wanted this to feel, I had like, and I still do have like pretty serious imposter syndrome. And I think that like, you know, with success, that kind of cools down a little bit. But like, dude, I was a 20-year-old kid punching way above my weight. I had zero money at all, like none. It was all floated. And so when I'm on the news and stuff, it was like, we, like I'm some part of some enterprise. And it's like, I had three emails. I had Adam, which is my email, info, which is like a general email, and then sales. And I answered all of them. It was all me, but they all had different phone numbers. They all had different signatures. I like, you know, treated it as if it was different people. Sometimes I even like spelt or like used different words like I would like I just want this to feel like a bigger thing. And so
that's funny.
Used like
so were the ATMs being made in Canada at that time? Like I know some about that world, but I mean,
dude,
where were they
being
made? This
is a whole story in and of itself, and I gave you the short one and the long one. But basically there was kind of like three different companies making Bitcoin ATMs that were about to make Bitcoin ATMs.
Okay.
One out of Vegas, one out of Portugal, and then one, unbeknownst to me at the time, out of Ottawa, in Canada.
Holy
and
cow.
So this is actually a super lucky story. So I bought a machine from the Vegas company and they completely ripped me off. I still to this day have not taken delivery of the Bitcoin ATM purchased, which is brutal.
Ugh.
So get this. So I borrow money from my father-in-law. I spend most of it on this ATM. Like, send it all, pre-funded. He's like, yep, delivery in 4 weeks, doesn't come. Delivery, don't worry, man, 2 weeks away, not coming. Like, so we went on for months. And then so finally, I went back and I was like, hey, this machine's not coming, but I need a machine. Like, we gotta get on this, so can I have some more cash? And luckily, he like gave me more cash. So I bought a different, like a secondhand machine, basically, from this, long story, but I ended up getting a machine right away and then launching it in Alberta. And then there happened to be a Bitcoin conference in Toronto like a month later. And I go to this Bitcoin conference, and like I was one of three in the country. So like I, you know, my face was kind of like a little bit well known.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting at this table and these guys are like, hey, you just launched the Bitcoin ATM in Alberta. And I was like, oh yeah, like it's super awesome. I'm loving this. This is great. Bitcoin, rah, rah. And they're like, we're making Bitcoin ATMs. You should buy one of ours. And I was like, oh, I'd love to, but I can't afford it because I'm waiting for this other one to come from Vegas. And you know, I spent all my money on this one, like blah, blah, blah. They're like, no problem. We'll give it to you. And then you pay us back out of profits. And I was like,
wow.
Absolutely.
This sounds great.
Like, so
are they still in business today? Where can I talk to them?
Yeah, they are. And they actually, I think they just got acquired a year and a half ago or so. And I don't think that deal exists. Like I think I was customer number one or I'm like pretty early, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how we launched our second Bitcoin ATM. They shipped
that's
it.
Awesome.
Yeah, man. It's just funny how like things kind of just, like I said though, opportunistic. It wasn't some like, I didn't have some business plan and some like 30-page, you know, PDF form and went into the office and got my like, no. It was very like fly by the seat of my pants, see something that I think is kind of nice, drive in that direction, and then figure it out once we get there.
Okay, so you start doing this, and so you end up with a handful, like dozens. Like I know you become even more known as the Bitcoin ATM guy, right? That grew more?
Yeah. So basically, as we grow, I just become, like, my life gets devoted to Bitcoin. I leave, my wife and I get married shortly after I deploy the Saskatchewan ATM, so we have two. We just decide, we go to Vancouver for a holiday, her and I, not on our honeymoon, like a few months after. We're like, this is great. We sign a lease, right there. We're just like, we're moving to Vancouver.
Yep.
So moved to Vancouver. I found another like ATM manufacturer, because now by this time, Bitcoin ATM, so there's this open source project, super, super cheap, $1,000 Bitcoin ATM. So I buy one of those and launch it in a little like noodle shop in Vancouver. Yep. I then make a deal with this like leverage company in Australia, and we like offered some like white label leverage products on the website.
Okay.
More and more and more, just kind of like, yeah, always hunting, you know, all profits back in, you know, it's like new machine, boom, new machine, boom, new machine, boom. Launching as much as possible. At the time though, I couldn't afford to do much. So I acted like I was like an extra on movie sets.
Oh, no way.
And so I would sit there all day, like I'd answer the phone, like different people, like answering the emails and stuff. And then in between that, I'm like going to stand somewhere as like I'm like a background extra in like Arrow and like other shows.
Okay.
And that's how I funded like life. For a little bit, my wife worked at Starbucks and I just was an extra, and then worked on the Bitcoin business.
Wow.
And then eventually just kind of built up a little network. Her and I moved back to Alberta. We continue building, and then in 2019 we made our first acquisition into an Eastern Bitcoin ATM company. And
when you say Eastern, what does that mean?
Like Eastern Canada, like Ontario based.
So that continues to grow, and so like at this point you have a company that owns Bitcoin ATMs. That's kind of like your thing. So that keeps growing. I mean, you still own that and still doing that? At what point did, I think Bitcoin Wells within the last couple of years or two?
Yeah, so that was Bitcoin Solutions. Sat for all of 10 seconds. I was like, what am I going to call this thing? Bitcoin Solutions. Boom, there it is. But then we started going public in 2021.
Okay.
And Bitcoin Solutions, it's like tough to trademark, tough to get like the, you know, public stuff. So that's where Bitcoin, and this is kind of, I would say that, you know, as part of going public, just like that decision to do that and then onward is kind of where the more strategic side of my brain started to develop.
Yep.
Before it was like, just figure things out, run, build, figure it out, you know, build, fail, retry, succeed again. And then going public, I noted very early on, there was no exit ever for Bitcoin ATMs. It's way too scary for legacy finance. Yeah. And then I also noticed there's no funding for Bitcoin ATMs. So very difficult to expand. And that's changed a little bit now, but still not too much. And then I noticed public companies getting a massive premium to Bitcoin when Bitcoin pumps. So I was like, okay, like for us, this is the only possible path. So I started going down that road.
Yeah.
And then the name change kind of came in and I started thinking about what I wanted this organization to be. And I started thinking, you know, obviously like at that time, Bitcoin something was taken. So I was kind of going down the line of like, what could it be? And I came across well. And you think about a well, you think about what gives life? Water, right? And so the very first thing, the very, very, very first thing that any settler had to dig or had to do was find water and dig a well. That's like job number one when you find new land. And we are the source of Bitcoin, which is like for financial sovereignty, this is how it comes. And so that's kind of where I started thinking about this Bitcoin well theme. And then the double entendre of like Bitcoin good. Like I'm just like, I'm a weirdo, I'm a psychopath. Like I just like that kind of stuff. And so Bitcoin well came into existence. Our logo, if you look at it, like if you look at it like this, it's a well turned upside down. It's a stack of coins coming up. So
cool.
Yeah, kind of nice. It's been hijacked by the Three Body Problem show recently. I'm not sure if you've seen that or not. But
I watched some of it. What does that have to do with the well?
Well, later on, their logo and our logo look very similar because right. It's like a three sun kind of thing. And so I've had a few people, not so much anymore because the show has kind of lost popularity. Yeah. But you know, at first I was like, hey, is that a Three Body Problem hat? And I was like, no, this is the company. Like, you know, thanks though. Yeah. I guess we got to work on our marketing a little bit.
That's so funny. Well, hey, I mean, listen, all publicity is good publicity. You know,
that's
Benioff
right.
and Weiss are probably less than thrilled that, you know, it's already gone out of favor because of how much money and time they put into that. What the interesting thing, so the place where we were ministering in Uruguay, there was a neighborhood that we were, it was like a, when I say neighborhood, think like a few hundred thousand people. It was called Pocitos. And so Pocitos means little wells.
Oh, wow.
And so like there was like a... some water area. There was like a well near there, but Little Wells is the name of the place. So,
dude, I love that so much. Pocitos. That's great. I'll have to go visit that place someday, and we can see what we can incorporate into the Bitcoin portal.
Let's go.
But yeah, man, that's kind of how we got started. And then as part of that too, like we really became focused on enabling independence, and that's where our mission came into play.
Yep.
And it started with Bitcoin. We used to say it was Bitcoin accessible. We want to make Bitcoin accessible and understood.
Sure.
Bitcoin accessibility is here. It's like, we got to enable independence. And so as a part of that came the Bitcoin ATMs are a piece of that, but really it's non-custodial Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin in self-custody that you can pass down to your children's children and your children's children's children.
Let's go.
And so that's kind of where the Bitcoin portal came into play. We've been developing that for, a couple of years now.
And so you go from, I have no business school training, to I'm now running this company that's got a bunch of ATMs too. Now I'm going public to this company that anybody in Canada can invest in. Like, what did that look like in terms of, are you just outsourcing, you're like hiring attorneys and you know, smart people in those areas? Like, what does that process look like?
So you realize very quickly that no one actually knows anything. And it's very frustrating because like we paid, like it cost us, I think when all is said and done, it cost us over $2 million to go public. And the majority of that was me training lawyers and bureaucrats on Bitcoin, like actual Bitcoin 101. And I've got history of this forever. Like we've been sued plenty of times. In the early days, I couldn't afford a lawyer. I would just walk into court, give like this massive blockchain 101. And then the judge was always just like, well, okay, like Adam wins. Like this is how it goes. It's crazy, man.
Wait, what were they suing you about?
Well, dude, a huge problem. And long before Bitcoin ATMs, but now it's kind of moved to Bitcoin ATMs. It's like, remember like the phone card and SIM card scams and gift card scams?
Gotcha.
And so they'd go to the ATM because like the CRA is on the phone and they got to pay $5,000. So they're going to go to jail like this afternoon. So they walk up, scan the, you know, the fraudster's like Bitcoin address, put $5,000 in the machine and then, you know, and then send the money. And the way that Bitcoin ATM works is like you put money in, you get Bitcoin instantly. That's like, that's a feature, not a bug. And of course, you know, we look like the bad guy because this lady's calling now the police like, this machine ate my money.
Stole 5,000. Yeah.
And it's like, no, we didn't. Yeah. Just like 7-Eleven didn't steal your money. Like you went, you purchased a gift card and then you sent that gift card to someone else.
Yeah.
But Bitcoin is scary and Bitcoin is new and Bitcoin is misunderstood. And so that naturally became the Bitcoin guy's problem.
Yeah.
And that was the most common.
You become Bitcoin marketing team. You're like the number, the 1-800 number for Bitcoin in Canada is
I mean, yeah, man, like I'm not that important, but like, yeah, certainly we needed to up our game on Bitcoin education. And we actually, one of the first things we did as part of going public was we made a Bitcoin Academy and we like spent a ton of cash on producing this highly produced, high quality Bitcoin education. We talk about like self-custody. We talk about like Bitcoin versus crypto. We talk about compliance and regulations at the time. We talk about like what Bitcoin is, talk about what money is, give a history of money. I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's great.
Is that still part of the Bitcoin well? Is that part of your website?
You guys
still,
it's inside the Bitcoin portal. You can take the Bitcoin Academy, and then we've got like a quiz that you can take afterwards. And once you complete it, you get some Bitcoin well points.
Cool. Okay. You found the company, you start going public. How long does that process take to
actually go public? Typically it takes 4 months, 4 to 6 months. Took us 18 months. because,
oh my goodness,
like, there was some Bitcoin companies that had gone public. We were the first non-custodial Bitcoin company to go public. And the problem that we ran into, which is crazy, is the fact that we don't hold customer funds. So we had securities commissions. Like, there's this, the one phone call that sticks out in my mind. It's me, three of our executive team, like our CFO and our CRO and our board members and stuff. My three securities lawyers, the ASC, maybe there's a CSA, like the Canadian Securities Administration, and their legal team. So we've got like thousands of dollars per hour sitting here in this room on the phone. And they're like talking to me like, well, how can the customer funds be safe? And I'm like, we don't have customer funds. Like, they give us money, we give them Bitcoin. Like, that's it. They're like, well, what happens if you go bankrupt? What happens to customer funds? It's like, guys, like, it's non-custodial, blah, blah, blah. And then so finally, what it came down to, they're like, well, your website doesn't say that you're non-custodial. I was like, well, it does. Here's where it says that. But give me 5 minutes. I go out to the bullpen. Literally put Canada's non-custodial Bitcoin company and then said, please refresh your page. And then she's like, oh, well, okay, then I guess you're good. Stamped, good to go. Stop it. It's just
after
like,
after 18 months, thank you. Oh,
yeah, man, it was brutal. And I shouldn't, you know, like, it was more than that. And to be fair, I was impatient. So we made an overseas acquisition in the UK at that time. We were progressing the business because I got so frustrated. They were like, stop business. I was like, for how long? They're like, well, 4 months. And I'm like, no, like, I'm just gonna sit here on my hands and like, think about that in 2020 in the world's greatest bull market. Like,
100%.
No. Like, you wanna protect investors? I wanna protect my investors and we gotta grow. Like, we gotta do more work. And so, there was some, like, something, you know, I'll own some of that. Anyways, we got it done. We're public now. You can buy Bitcoin Well shares. You can participate in enabling independence, which I love. Cause I believe in, like, the future is, like, I believe it's like publicly traded Bitcoin super company is what I'm calling it. And it's like, we want to have a hand in funding and or producing most things that touch Bitcoin. And when you think about Bitcoin, it's money. It's like, sure, there's the ATMs, which, you know, have a piece to Bitcoin. And then there's our Bitcoin portal, which is like going to replace your bank account one day. And there's some cards, there's some merchant services, there's some international remittances, there's some media, there's some education. Yep. It's like, there's some mining. There's like, whoa, you know, Bitcoin's a massive industry. And I believe that over the next 25 to 50 years, you know, we are going to be this publicly traded Bitcoin super company that kind of has a hand in all things, kind of like how media companies are now. Like, look at Meta, for example. Meta's like Facebook, Oculus, WhatsApp, Instagram. Like, they've got these different brands that, like, you look at, like, you know, any media, like Disney's got like how many different subcos, you know, with production and cruises and parks and like all this stuff. And so that's kind of where I see us heading.
Okay. The TGFB podcast is brought to you by the TGFB 24 conference. Thank God for Bitcoin 2024 is happening July 24th and 25th in Nashville. This conference brings together some of the best minds in the church, the academy, and in Bitcoin to explore the biblical foundations and daily consequences of how money affects the incentives and outcomes of the world we live in. The name of the conference this year is Render to God, Stewardship, Dominion, and the Economics of Glory. We figured that an election year was the perfect time to examine the relationship between God, government, and money. We'll dive deep into what the Bible has to say about what money is, the role it plays in society, and why the principles governing money creation have such a huge and yet underappreciated effect on every aspect of our world. I'll be speaking alongside pastors and respected Christian figures like C.R. Wiley, Thomas Terry, Eric Hirschman, Glenn Sunshine, and many more. Tickets are limited, so use promo code TGFB24 to save 10% today before prices increase. You can also, for a limited time, if you would like to bring your wife with you, we would love for you to do that. We would love husbands to be able to bring their wives. And so we are offering 80% off tickets for wives who want to accompany their husbands. So that means you can get two tickets today for $300 by using promo code COUPLE at checkout at tgfb.com/store. Go ahead, run over and do that. We'd love to have husbands and wives together to talk about these very important topics. This is a one-of-a-kind community experience at the intersection of theology, technology, ethics, finance, and economics. We hope to see you there. Okay, back to the show. So what does the process look like as far as you guys building out your team? Like, has it been capacitating Bitcoiners, or has it been, all right, we're bringing these other people into the fold and we have to do, like, go through like a Bitcoin education course for them? Or has it been some combination of the two? What does that process look like?
Kind of a combo of two. I actually think I probably didn't scale up the right way the first time. Took like a high time preference, like traditional approach to scaling up, which was like, here's a bunch of money that the investors gave you. Hey, Adam, if you double the business, we're going to do 10 times more. It's like, all right, let's spend as fast as possible, grow as fast as possible. Sustainability, who cares? Scalability, who cares? Just show growth. And we did that. And the market kind of turns down. Like we tripled the business in like 13 or 14 months, like something stupid. Like I'm like, we're burnt, we're done. Like it was so exhausting. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, but there's, you know, the investors, you know, the bankers are going to help it. And obviously not. So we didn't scale up properly that time. But yeah, at that time it was definitely, I'm a stickler for being in person. And I wanted people to be in the office, feeling the energy of each other, you know, collaborating with each other, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, but we're in Edmonton. And it's like Bitcoin at that time, especially, was like, not wildly popular, very few cypherpunks to choose from here in Edmonton. So had a kind of a hard time. So we did hire people that need to be educated about Bitcoin, but that actually, I think, played to our advantage because as a result, we made a product that is so normie friendly. Like it's literally buy Bitcoin, send it to your address, and voila. It's so simple, so easy. And I think that's been to our benefit. Lucky for me, like I've got, you know, a fair amount of technical Bitcoin knowledge. And so when needed, like we just launched Lightning up here in Canada and I kind of played some technical lead on that. And I was able to, like, cause I've got like my first Bitcoin wallet was a Bitcoin node. That's what there was in 2013. So I've got some experience setting up nodes. And so, you know, we set up the node and then now our, like our tech team right now is phenomenal. They've got a plethora of Bitcoin experience. So yeah, it was great. We got to like educate and teach people and build Bitcoiners while the, you know, the Bitcoiners build like the Bitcoin business.
Yeah, man, that's super interesting. So how are you guys growing? Is it pretty just natural? Where are you guys targeting? I mean, obviously I would imagine more Canadians than other folks, but what has been your, I mean, what's
Our focus?
Yeah.
So our focus, we started in Canada. We are definitely though, we launched in the USA in September. We just though got approval for like all 50 states, including New York in February. So you can see, and you know, if you go to our website slash like bitcoinworld.com/investors, you can see our investor deck and you'll see a slide in there that shows our US growth and it's like this, and then it's like February comes and it's like boom. And that's when we turned on some media partnerships. We really put a lot of emphasis on the Bitcoin portal in the USA, and really like we're the only non-custodial Bitcoin company in the USA. And I think it's so important, man, and you know it's an uphill battle, it's an uphill climb. We've been partnered with Simply Bitcoin since February, and they're
Nico,
shout out Nico, shout out Opti, like they're
Opti.
They're really helping us get our message out there, which has been super great. And they've been phenomenal to collaborate with. Looking for more US-based Bitcoin podcasts. So I don't know.
Very based. Looking for some very based podcasts. We'll
there
see
we go.
We
got so yeah, we've been lucky to have a product that is simple, a product that is easy to use, but also a product that hits home, you know. Like our mission is to enable independence, and literally every decision we make, like there are times when there's a better product that exists than what we build, but it does not enable independence. There's a no starter clause, and me, the team, we all are in agreement, and we all know like if this disables independence, it does not make its way into the Bitcoin Well Bitcoin portal.
Wow.
And I think that's an important ethos that, you know, everyone in the company shares, but more importantly, like our customers share.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we'll succeed, even though we're non-custodial. We'll succeed despite of the fact that we're non-custodial, not because we're non-custodial, I think.
Yeah. Do you offer the option to like be custodial, or you're just like, we don't even want to even enable it?
Yeah, we don't even enable it. But the problem there is UTXOs, obviously. And the other problem there is like, I'm a brand new Bitcoiner and I'm scared to take self-custody. And so the first one, like UTXOs is solved by Lightning. We've just deployed some Lightning stuff here in Canada. It's working phenomenally. Because we're non-custodial, we have to push ourselves to think harder. We actually got, like, we have the best Lightning product in Canada, objectively. I'm not even just like biased. It's just actually the best. Like it's, and I would challenge anyone, here's a call out, call, you know, like prove me wrong.
Does Bull Bitcoin have Lightning enabled?
They do. Ours is far superior. I haven't talked to Francis about this.
We need to get the debate going. We'll get Francis.
Let's go. Let's call Francis, and like I'm happy to chat with him. Francis and I, by the way, we're friends. We're like we're buddies. Love Francis. I think Bull's a phenomenal company.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, like, we have the best Lightning product in Canada. So you know that's coming to the USA. That'll solve our UTXO problem. I'm too scared to take self custody. I have like two responses. The first response is okay. Like maybe you need to go back and do some research, and you probably shouldn't use Bitcoin Well right now because we are a bring your own address platform. You cannot even onboard. You can't even connect your bank account until you have given us an external personal Bitcoin address that you want to use to withdraw Bitcoin towards. So that's answer number one. Answer number two is, it's like, well, Adam, that's worse for everyone. I believe that human beings, especially brand new, you know, Bitcoiners, are like fragile little babies. And if you give a fragile little baby the easiest path to what they want, they're going to take that, and they will no longer do the research. They will no longer invest the time required to learn about a self-custody Bitcoin wallet. And then what happens? It's on FTX, right? And then it's sitting in, you know, like, and look at, there are prominent Bitcoin exchanges in the USA that are around that have had problems losing customer funds. And the only reason they're around is because the investors have paid for it. The investors straight up write checks to cover customer losses. Well, how far does that go, right? When does that stop? There are three problems to holding your Bitcoins on an exchange. The first one, obviously, is like the FTX debacle, like just fraudster, right? This guy's a scam artist. That one's probably like, I think, going away. I think we're mature enough. There's enough regulators. There's enough like people in jail. That's not going to happen too much more in the USA. Then there's a second one, which is just incompetence. Because at the end of the day, Bitcoin is control, is not control Z money. And so if your Bitcoins are sitting in a wallet that can be infiltrated, and by the way, it's easy to infiltrate. Just like the second somebody bad wants to get something from a low level or medium level employee at a massive company, let's call them Coinbase, they could just kidnap, right? Like they, they can use extortion. Like there are very real old ways to steal things, especially when those things can be transferred digitally and without the ability to be reversed. So that's the second problem. But the third problem is, and I've got it like sitting right here, 6102. Like, if your coins are in someone else's custody and the government comes and says, hey, I want those Bitcoin, that person's going to give up the Bitcoin just every single time, 100% of the time.
They don't want to go to jail. They don't want to get shut down. Like, it's the whole thing. So, it's just follow the incentives.
When the government comes to me and is like, give me Jordan's Bitcoin, I'm like, sorry, I don't have Jordan's Bitcoin. If you subpoena me and like put me under a waterboard, I will give you the list of transactions that he, you know, under all duress, legal things. Like, I obey the law. Right? We're a very above board compliant company, so we will comply with the law. But the max that you're going to get out of me is information. Because guess what? Jordan
I don't have
has
his, money.
His Bitcoin. Yeah. I don't have it. And by the way, you're getting a phone call like, hey, you gotta like time to go.
So funny.
To put a bow around it, when you leave your Bitcoin with somebody else, it is, it's very important. Again, what enables more independence is taking self-custody.
Here's a potential like, you know, pushback on this is like, okay, you're the one who compared this to babies. So babies obviously live with their parents, you know, for a number of years. They live in the safety. Their parents protect them, provide for them until they're ready to leave the nest. There does seem to be, even within, you know, the rest of the world, there seems to be like some recognition of there needs to be this overlapping of custody until, you know, you're ready to be free.
Yeah, but you don't get the same benefits as a baby. Yeah. You're not out there starting businesses. You're not out there meeting loved ones and feeling the euphoria, the dopamine of love. You're not sitting there choosing your meals and cooking your dinners and feeling the job well done pride. You're like a literal blob. You're a useless blob that experiences nothing. You get zero, right? Until you're ready. And then with maturity, you get to experience. And like, what is the euphoria of Bitcoin? It's number go up, man. That's like... That's hardwired into our brain. And so, you know, like, frankly, you don't deserve number go up if you're not ready to take self-custody. And my goal is to get you ready for self-custody. I'm like an incubator. Like, I want to get you as ready for self-custody as possible. And so, like, from our business perspective, you know, I believe education is important, but I also believe strategic and smart third parties. Like, I just diabolically oppose to the person that sells you Bitcoin also being the one that holds your Bitcoin. Yep. And so we partner with people like, you know, the Bitcoin Mentor. Like, there are others that were
shout out to Ben.
Shout out Ben, man. And like, we want those people to teach you how to buy and then hold and then sell Bitcoin.
Yep.
And I want to be able to just sit back and say, look, I've got coins when you're ready, right? It's the easiest way to buy Bitcoin. It's the safest way to buy Bitcoin. I'm going to send them straight to that brand new cold card, that brand new passport, that brand new cold storage device. I'm sending the coins straight there the second you're ready. Just let me know when. Because I refuse to give you this like mother's teat for too much longer, because it's just not good for you, man. Like imagine a 15-year-old kid sucking on mother's teat and it can't even cook any eggs. Like that's just no bueno, and we don't want that. And so I think that human beings are ready to self-custody. Human beings are capable of self-custody. It is scary because we've had a financial system for so long that has been very
held your hand
custodied. And, and we got to just break the curve. Like, dude, my 15, maybe 16-year-old babysitter, I've orange-pilled her. She wants to be paid exclusively in Bitcoin. And guess what? She self-custodies. Like, come on, right? It's not that hard. 16-year-old girl can do it. Like, you can probably do it, right? We also, by the way, we trust her to operate a 5,000-pound vehicle on the road.
Yeah.
Like, we can probably trust her with a couple hundred bucks in her own possession.
I love the idea. I'm writing this down. I will be using this from now on. Is using a custodied Bitcoin is like being a 16-year-old drinking breast milk. I will definitely be.
Dude.
I will definitely use that.
Hey,
one
you got to credit me for that one. That's. But yeah, man, that's what it is.
Let's see. You know, you've got different businesses. You got Swan. You've got River. You've got different companies, different exchanges. There's much more. Those are the two that immediately come to mind. Why do you think they choose to go the route that they do? What's the incentive? You know, for them,
it's the path of least resistance, and they got VCs demanding growth, right? Like, ultimately, we're public, we've got shareholders demanding growth too. I'm not reliant on checks in the future, of course. I want number to go up of our share price. That's where my, you know, majority of my net worth is sitting. Like, let's go. But at the end of the day, I believe in enabling independence. This is what I exist to do. This is why Bitcoin well exists.
Yeah.
And so if you exist to bring Bitcoin to the masses, for example, or something, blah blah blah, like, I don't know who's like, just whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, well, that's great, but if BlackRock holds all your Bitcoin or like some other custodian, like, what good is it, right? What good is it when 6102 happens? What good is it when the custodian gets hacked? What good is it when you have an emergency and then you have to go through all kinds of like weird, oh, well, did you donate to a bad protest 8 years ago that we disagree with? And oh, hey, actually, you eat a lot of red meat. I'm not super sure that you deserve this Bitcoin. Your carbon emissions are pretty high, and Bitcoin is quite a high carbon emitting asset. So we're going to just diversify you out of, like, you have no control anymore.
Yep.
And Bitcoin's about independence. Bitcoin's about controlling the value that you create with your time. And so it's like nothing against that business model, other than it's bad. I'm just kidding. But like in my opinion, it's a little bit higher time preference. It's a much easier business model to build. It's also just like, in my opinion, it is applying legacy finance principles to Bitcoin. I would rather apply Bitcoin principles and then try to work in legacy. And we're building this on its head, man. We want to. Yeah. Our tagline is, we want to couple the convenience of modern banking with the benefits of Bitcoin. What are the benefits of Bitcoin, right? Self-custody. That's it, right? There's some other benefits, but self-custody, that's the benefit of Bitcoin. And so how do we apply the modern banking lens to self-custody Bitcoin?
I love it. It's just fantastic. Yeah, that, I mean, honestly, I can't take credit for this, all right? But I literally think all the time, and before it happened, I literally prayed for something like the Canadian trucker thing to happen to illustrate the value proposition of Bitcoin, right? This is money that can operate outside of this world. And that ended up, you know, shout to BJ, you know, Dictor, shout to lots of those guys. Like, it was the perfect dress rehearsal for what Bitcoin can do, so.
Totally, man. And interestingly enough, like, just on the trucker protest thing, there's a big like spoof. The media was like, oh, the Bitcoin were seized. And lots of the Bitcoin was seized because it went through a custodian.
Yeah.
It didn't go through a you know, peer-to-peer self-custody Bitcoin wallets. So it's like, this is it. And also, I think it's important to note, you know, the trucker protests, like, I'm sure your audience is maybe quite conservative leaning, but it's important to note that both sides of the aisle will be censored at some point.
Yeah.
And I think the absolute perfect example for this is the abortion debate, because both sides are very passionate about it. They're complete opposites, and there are merits to both sides. Okay, and so it's like, if there is one side that thinks the other one is wrong, you can censor that. Boom, you're done. And then the same thing on the other side. It is very easy to see how, if there are laws and rules in place where I can choose who does or does not get to use money, and then the ruler changes, and all of a sudden what I used to see as good is now bad. Well, now there's a tool for that ruler to make me the bad guy. And I think it's like, let's bring this is not political, this is apolitical. This is bigger than just some, oh, this free speech maxi, like these right-wing crazy people. It's like, no, we were about independence, and we're about making sure that the world can operate independently.
Yeah, that makes sense. So one of the first conversations we had was you telling me about this presentation that you had done. Was it in Spain or where was
Costa Rica?
Costa Rica, okay.
Yeah,
you did. What was the conference?
It's called the Freedom Festival.
Freedom Festival,
the Bitcoin jungle in Costa Rica. Amazing place.
And so you did this presentation called Jesus is a Bitcoiner.
Yeah.
Which, again, there's some people who are listening, they're like, all right, where's that off button? Let's figure out. Whether because they're not Christians or because they are Christians and they're like, how is that not the most blasphemous thing that I've heard in the last 52 minutes? So why would Jesus be a Bitcoiner? Why? Why do you think that's true? And then what's your argument?
So yeah, the title is definitely teetering on the like controversial side.
From a guy who was part of writing a book called Thank God for Bitcoin, I'm familiar with the territory that you're treading on right now.
Totally. And yeah, like some of the people that I give respect to in my life have given me like, hey man, you should probably be pretty careful with this. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But basically the premise is Bitcoin is a journey. And you start, you know, in the presentation I say, you're a pre-maximalist, you're a pre-Bitcoin maximalist, everyone is. And then you graduate to being a Bitcoin maximalist. Yeah. And I kind of thought I was done there. But then as I started diving deeper into Bitcoin, I told you my story earlier about how like my wife's diving in, we've got COVID. Keep in mind, at that time, it's like restrictions are happening, COVID is happening. My wife is like getting spiritual guidance. I'm taking this Bitcoin company public. I'm seeing all this pushback. There's lots of things going on in my life at that time. And my wife's like, yo, we need some spiritual guidance. And I'm like diving into the Bible a bit more. And that's cool. And I'm like diving into Bitcoin, right? Obviously a lot more. Diving into the Bible a lot more. And the more of the Bible I'm reading, I'm like, hey, this is a Bitcoin principle. This is a Bitcoiner principle. Like, wait a second, this is a Bitcoiner principle. And so I kind of started having this thesis around Bitcoin is at best, or at worst, Bitcoin is part of God's design, or this at least represents some of what God had originally intended for money and for the earth. And then sort of diving more into like Jesus and like some of the actual, like you know, we hear the stories and it's like, hooray, hooray, but like actually diving in. And I think what I came down to was the story in Matthew when Jesus is asked by one of his disciples. It says one of his, it doesn't say his disciples, it just says someone in the crowd, but I read it to be the disciple.
One of his followers,
One of his followers. It says, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus is like, there's some antics and some dramatics as Jesus tends to do. And then he straight up says, like, until you humble yourself and be like children, you won't even enter the kingdom of heaven. Forget being great in heaven. Like unless you're humble, you are not even going to be able to get in to heaven. You got to humble yourself like a child. That hit me, man. That was like you know, stay humble, stack sats, like lower your time preference, like you know, don't be some like arrogant buffoon running around trying to, you know, I think about there's a guy down the street here, like wearing the microphone, you know, shouting like, you're going to hell if you do this. And like he's not bringing anyone to Jesus. And like, that's how I see lots of the like toxic maxis who are just like spouting hate and talking like, you know, have fun staying poor, like that kind of stuff. It's not humble. It's very arrogant. It's very like abrasive and not very nice. And so that's kind of where this thought originated. And then I just, you know, dove down the thought and all the different, and now what it's kind of turned into for me is this opportunity to like pick different themes that Bitcoiners adopt and appreciate and then lean into, first of all, does Jesus, like that's an important question, right? Does his life and his mission and his words, you know, tend to this? And then if they do, how can I spread the message? Because I think what you're probably trying to do is like orange pill the church, but I'd rather like white pill the Bitcoiners. And that's kind of what I'm set out to do with that presentation, I guess, which is why it's so like, you know, hit you in the face.
We're trying to do all the things because like we're writing a book that that guy Dan and I are writing, who's actually, he's Canadian, he lives in Toronto. It's called The Gospel According to Bitcoin. And that's exactly what it does, is it basically, it's like Bitcoin is a parable that has all different kinds of things within it. So love the mission, love that thought. Maybe unpack like what's one of the other maybe tenets from the presentation, or just as you've been thinking about it, here's one specific principle that maybe most encapsulates that idea.
Yeah, so I think like the humility one is a big piece of that.
Okay.
But then I think too, like decentralization, like you think about Jesus, who came at a time when the Roman Empire was the ruler, right? They were the end all be all. They determined like, and I got kind of got some kickback on this, but like, to be fair, they gave the Jews the ability to worship their God. Like they gave them their little bubble and said, okay, you guys, there you go. Like, sure, this is God's land and we believe in the same God. And so you guys can have your little, but like, let's call it what it is, right? The Romans were not that great. They were not that godly. They were not that like good of rulers. And Jesus came at that time, which, you know, I call divine. I call that pretty, like, that's not a coincidence, right?
In the fullness of time, right?
In the fullness of time. That's when. And so, okay, we've got this incredible kingdom that's getting more and more and more centralized, that's turning further and further and further away from God. It is now worship Caesar. It is now like very much, I mean, is it secular? Maybe not, right? I won't go that far, but it's definitely centralized. And God came to like blow the top off of that. Jesus came to blow the top off of that. He says like, you know, look to God. He puts the church back into the people. He calls the church his bride. He relates the church back to his people, to you and I. And then literally, like, I think the coolest part about this story in Romans, Paul describes how Jesus like literally calls us to, this is what inspires Paul's letters, like to Corinth and to Romans. And like, we're literally called to decentralize the message of Christ and then spread it. So the number one attribute that you can have to get into heaven is humility.
Yep.
And then Jesus's mission, his like life's work, was to save humanity. Okay.
Yep.
But like, you know, on a more micro level, was to decentralize the church. So that 2024 years later, you and I can be talking about it and spreading the message and continuing this like decentralized way. So I think, and there's so many other examples like that.
Yeah.
Like, what do Bitcoiners like? Well, we don't like rulers, right? We like rules, but not rulers. We understand there needs to be rules, but not rulers. Okay, that's great. It's just, I don't know, man. It's so cool the more that you dive into it. And what I've kind of come down to is, the more and more that I dive into Bitcoin, the more and more that I see Jesus in that. And that excited me. And then I ran down that path. And lucky for me, it's definitely turning out to be more so than I thought.
Yeah. With my kids, we talk about this is like, basically, there's only one story. And like every other story is playing off of the one story that's there.
Totally.
And so like, if it's a good story, it's going to have certain elements because those elements exist within the biblical story. And so there's Christ figures all over the place. And my kids, I'll quiz them as we're watching something. And I'd be like, who are the Christ figures? You know,
wow,
so
that's cool.
We like quarterly watch Lord of the Rings.
Nice.
And so we watch those all the time. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I'm not kidding. We do it all the time. But so, and so we talk about like, who are the Christ figures? And there's multiple Christ figures. So you've got like Aragorn's a Christ figure in terms of he's the king. His lineage is kind of forgotten. Like he's not really recognized as the rightful king, but he is. And then you have somebody like a Frodo, who's like the suffering servant. You know, Frodo, he's sitting there, he's battling against temptation. He's got to go through all this suffering in order to basically become the savior of the world. Gandalf is the Christ figure, another point. But, and so again, I don't know why this is a problem for people, but people get real weirded out, especially Christians and even the ones that you're mentioning. Like, they get weirded out when you start to talk about other things and just point out that the world is Christ-shaped and all of history is like oriented around his kingdom coming and his will being done. And there's only one way to live effectively in God's world, and that's according to the way that he's set it up to, you know, set it up to function. And so the idea of thinking about Satoshi as a Christ figure, I don't know why people have problems with that, but it just makes me think of, like, you know, Jesus said, he who would be greatest, you know, must be the servant of all. So in Satoshi, you have this guy who has this incredible idea. And rather than basically tell a couple people and then try to preserve it and then raise VC funds and all this kind of stuff, he just gives it away. He literally gives away his best idea.
Dude, and a great sacrifice too, because he's got, what is he, like the fifth richest person in the world right now or something
so
like that?
So far, yeah. But like, even then you can argue, like, he is going to be, there's going to be, I mean, if Bitcoin does half of what we think it's going to do, just by virtue of the addressable market, all this kind of stuff, the need, you know, all these kind of things, you're looking at this guy who gives away his best idea becoming the wealthiest person on earth. Yeah. And like, I just think about it all the time, like, that'll preach.
No, man, totally.
That'll preach.
It's funny, man, because I also have, like, I've got some, it feels blasphemous. Like, and Luke Broyles and I actually chatted about this on his podcast a few weeks ago. We chatted about how, like, that is a Christ-like thing to do. Yeah. I think that where we run into trouble is people that don't fully understand us and don't understand Bitcoin and don't understand like what we're trying to say. They think that we're trying to, in my experience anyways, like shove Bitcoin.
Baptize Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas that's not the goal. It's just like you have to make things though relatable. And I don't think that's a problem.
Yeah. We talk about this too. Like, money is one of the prime metaphors that Jesus uses repeatedly over and over again. And so Dan is the one who articulated this, and it's a fantastic observation. It's like, so if Jesus uses money as one of his most common parables, then it's not just that we can follow him. It's that, you know, maybe we should learn from Jesus by using money because of how many things it clarifies and opens up for us about the rest of our life. So keep on there, my friend. Continue giving your presentation. And again, the thing that I found, again, in doing this for 5 years of just like going down the rabbit hole of Bitcoin and talking to Christians about these issues is, again, the more that I've leaned into Bitcoin, the more I've appreciated and come to understand other things as well. Like, including, I look at the world differently. I look at, in some senses, the scriptures differently, just because, like, in order for parables to work, you have to have a working understanding of the world. You have to have
then and now. Like, the context is so important.
Exactly. And so the more that you have like a true understanding of economics, of money, it actually heightens, like adds clarity to some of the other things. And so, you know, finding truth wherever it is something that I know Bitcoin has helped with. We're coming right to the end of our time here. Dude, thank you so much for your time and for what you're doing. Why don't you just tell people where they can find you? And then if you just want to, you know, just give maybe we kind of did do an informal commercial for Bitcoin Well, but yeah. If there's anything else you want to, you know, tell people about Bitcoin Well, feel free to go ahead and do it.
Yeah, man. I mean, definitely like follow me on Twitter if you're active there, AdamO'Brien_ if you're there, but then go to bitcoinwell.com, check out the platform. We build in public. And we do this so that our users can be the ones that drive us. We have the same mission as our users. And that's so exciting for me, is that we both want independence.
Yep.
And if you want to see a product or a service that enables your independence, please let me know. We want to build that for you. And we want to make it easier for you to orange pill your friends and get them off zero into self-custody.
Man, we did not get to talk. Well, maybe we're here. We'll do like 5 minutes on GetBase TV. This is like basically a media enterprise that you're part of that does great little bite-sized, in some longer form too, but just bite-sized explanations of Bitcoin concepts, of monetary concepts, of some political concepts even. What's kind of your role there and how did that come about?
I'm just part of the crew. You know, we're part of the people you see on the camera. Our mission is to, it's as you said, make Bitcoin digestible and help educate the people that are like, it's similar to what you're realizing right now in like the church. There's a lot of people that are 90% Bitcoiners and they just need that last 10.
Yep.
And we want to hit them over the edge.
Get
we want to get them.
Yeah.
That's what we do. We make content that's relatable. We make content that's exciting. We want to also, I think we're starting to roll this out now a little bit better. We want to help other creators. Like we want to decentralize this a little bit. And we've got the secret sauce. We know what scripts hit. We know what editing hits. We know how to go viral. And I think it's important that we help other creators, other business owners who want to help wake up the world, who want to help, you know, be part of this transition towards a more independent, a more free society. And we want to help them make videos too.
So that's actually part of what you're doing too. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It's awesome working with people that have the same mission and values as you is so nice. It is just like, it should be a requirement. This is like, it is just so much better. You can just jump straight to business. It's way more, you know, we talked a little bit about inefficiency earlier, but it's like, it's way more efficient.
Yeah.
You have no more like, it's just a better way to do things.
Love it. Man, we could go so much longer and this will
not
be
the last
time.
Let's do it again, bro. This
won't be the last time we talk. We've got that giant Twitter thread we could talk about. There's lots of meat on the bone there, but this way people will have a better concept for who we are right from the gate. And then we can spend, you know, a good amount of time talking about some of those things. But
I love it, man. I'm looking forward to my wife and I are coming to Thank God for Bitcoin in Nashville. So I'm going to be there looking forward to, hanging out, chatting more. Maybe we'll do a live thing. Yeah, man, I'm here for it.
Definitely.
You're going to be seeing a lot more of me.
Yep. No, yeah, Adam's gonna be coming. We're talking about, we think Adam's gonna be speaking. So come on down. That'll be our last thing here. So Thank God for Bitcoin 2024 is gonna be in Nashville, July 24th and 25th, Wednesday and Thursday. Again, it's gonna be two packed days. We're going like 8:30 to 5 p.m. both days. One of the 2 days is, the first of the 2 days is gonna be basically a Christian economics conference, how to just basically look at money, economics, politics as well, because they do interact more than people might be intuitive. So that's basically day one. And then day two is basically applying what we've learned for day one about, you know, Christian's economics to Bitcoin, and basically demonstrating both from a practical basis and then, you know, just in philosophical, theological basis, like what they have to do with each other, because there's a lot more overlap than people think.
Dude, that's so important. I love that education line.
Yeah.
Kudos, man. I'm looking forward to seeing lots of this content.
Yeah. So you can grab tickets at tgfb.com/conference. Every ticket comes with a ticket to we're doing a screening. We're partnering with Alana from the Dirty Coin documentary. So everybody who gets a ticket gets a ticket to the Dirty Coin screening that they're going to have there, including the panel afterwards, with like Margo Paez and Troy Cross and a bunch of other dudes, you know, fine folks from the Bitcoin world, Eric Hirschman. So again, we have some other stuff that we're working on as well. So we're trying to make the ticket price more than worth it between the theological education, the Bitcoin education, and then just the other elements of this. So we'd love to see you there. You can find out more information on our website. And Adam, thank you so much. Again, this will not be the last time we'll have you on again soon, and appreciate what you do.
Thanks, man.
Catch you later. All right. Our mission at TGFB is to help Christians understand and use Bitcoin for the glory of God and the good of people everywhere. We do this through podcasts, books, consulting services, and live events. We love giving away as much of our resources as possible, but we do have real overhead costs.
And there are a number of easy ways that you can help us keep the lights on to continue our mission. First, if you're a Bitcoiner, you can listen to the podcast on the Fountain app and stream us sats in real time as you listen to the podcast. Every contribution makes a difference, no matter how small. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/TGFB to receive a number of special benefits available only to our Patreon supporters. If you find these conversations valuable, you can also help spread the word by sharing this episode, subscribing on YouTube, and leaving reviews on Apple and Spotify. Leaving us good reviews goes a long way toward ensuring that the algorithmic powers that be look favorably on our humble endeavors. And finally, engage with us on social media. Join the conversation so that we can build a strong community united around faith, freedom, and sound money. We mentioned the TGFB 24 conference on July 24th and 25th in Nashville. You can go grab your tickets at tgfb.com/store. And finally, go check out julianabarbati.com if you have questions about how to start or better your own podcast. We're grateful for your support, and we look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Thank God for Bitcoin podcast.